You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. David, how was your Thanksgiving? We are fresh off of one of the best holidays ever.
It was good, man. I am still at my parents' residence down in East Central Iowa, and just taking in the atmosphere, eating all the delicious food I can stomach, and just enjoying life. How was yours, man?
I am still packed full of turkey and ham and potatoes and everything nice.
As it should be.
But we should probably talk about some basketball, because the Timberwolves have looked good as of late.
I mean,
one game, of course.
But what's the last memory from the Orlando game, Colton?
You know what? This is a positive Friday, not a negative one.
Hey, we want to recap the game. We can talk just about the third quarter if you want, because the third quarter is the best quarter of basketball I've played this year, period. Like,
I was assuming we were going to act like that was the only part of basketball that existed out of the last month.
Hey, man, we got to talk about that fourth quarter, too, because that's unfortunately becoming a thing that is a recurring theme of watching these Minnesota Timberwolves.
All right, you know what? Let's get to the fourth quarter first and get the yucky part out of the way, and then let's talk about the third quarter. How's that sound?
Sounds good to me.
All right, outscored 38-18 as Orlando made a really, really nice push in the final quarter to try and steal one on the road against Minnesota. How scared were you when they started knocking down shots and Minnesota couldn't hit anything?
It was interesting because I follow a couple of the Magic beat writers on Twitter, and so I was keeping up with kind of where their vibe was at with the game, and they kind of kept me rational about it because they're like, they were down by like 30 points. It's too much. They're not going to climb up it. And in the end, they were right, but like, I think it was they went 1-for-15 to start the fourth quarter or something absurd like that, and just like the bench couldn't do anything. Tibbs brought in the starters on a really short leash, shorter than usual. Starters couldn't do anything, and just like they, if my quick math is right, they were up by 26 points going into the fourth quarter, and that got down into single digits real fast, and that was. Just like, but we've seen it before, right? They've kept doing this in fourth quarters where they let teams back into it after they've got their foot on the neck. And it feels like a lack of maturity in this team, which isn't something we were hoping to see this year with the veteran presence they brought in.
I think when I was watching the game, I just thought back to what we were talking about earlier in the season. And it's just that I really don't think that there's going to be a ton of wins where they blow teams out. I think most of these wins are going to be pretty tight, and the Orlando Magic game held true to that, where if they're going to get a win, it's not going to be by 20 points. It's going to be by 8, and I know they blew out the Mavericks, but the Mavericks are an exceptionally horrendous team.
But the thing is, they should, right? Like, they're up by, like, 25 points in these games and can't stay there.
Yeah,
that's kind of a problem, because it's like, it's not even so much that they should be blowing out these teams because they're better talent-wise. We know that, right? That's been a stated fact. It's that they should be blowing these teams out because they're up by 25 points with 12 minutes to play.
Yeah, because like, the talent is coming through.
That's frustrating.
Yeah, and I was talking with Tuesday with Dane about their offense, and we were mentioning how, and he made a really nice observation of how it's just it always kind of looks a little like it's not quite in rhythm. Even when it's looking good, there's a little bit of a sense that it doesn't quite click. It's almost there, but it doesn't quite click. And now you're kind of getting the sense that it changes a little bit from quarter to quarter, as opposed to game even, where the offense just quite can't stay in sync or get to that level of gelling that you want them to be in, where they can hold on to those 25 point leads. And I think it might be just something we have to live through till maybe January.
Yeah, like Dane may have touched on this, but if you look at their net rating by quarter, they're 16th in net rating in the first quarter. They are I didn't pre- prep this beforehand. They are third in the NBA in net rating in the second quarter. So they're really good in second quarters. And then in the third quarter, they're seventh in the NBA. So top 10 team in, by net rating in both the second and the third quarters. In the fourth quarter, they are dead last in the league with a minus 15.4 net rating, which is 6 points worse than their next one than the next two teams, one of whom is the ever-so-excellent Chicago Bulls.
Dear Lord. You know what? Quick shout-out, though. Quick shout-out. David, with the clutch stats on Black Friday, I like it. It's basically a holiday in the U.S., and he's coming out with clutch stats. He's here to play and perform, and I like that a lot. But that is an abysmal number, especially in the fourth quarter when you're giving yourself a lead through those through the second and third quarter. That, man, that can't happen.
Yeah. Getting outscored by 15 points per 100 possessions in fourth quarters. And it's just like you look at the second and third quarter, and they look like a top team in the league. And then they just, like, can't do it. And we've seen this bad starts and bad finishes. This is, like, the stats play out what we've seen just eye test watching this team. We've seen it all. Like,
yeah, it was on the upside, I did like that the starters played really well just across the board. You had everybody but Taj Gibson, and he even had 18 points. You had everybody but Taj Gibson score 20 or more points. And on a night where the bench only put up 14. That was encouraging to see the starters just really perform really well.
I got another stat for you, but this one I prepped before time, and I think I tweeted it out on Wednesday night. Taj Gibson has scored more than 24 points in three games in his career ever.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I read that wrong. It's Taj Gibson with 24, Towns with 18. I'm really good this morning.
Taj Gibson with 24 points.
Taj gives him 24.
The fourth best output of his entire career, and the most he scored since February 2014.
He also played 40 minutes.
If they lose that game with that kind of scoring output from Taj that you never get, that is just absolutely unacceptable.
It would have been really. I liked too. Taj Gibson played really well. I really liked the double double of Teague too, getting 22 points and the 11 assists. I really love the fact that there's a possibility there where he can put up 20 points and still be a really great facilitator, and that's a really fun version of the offense that you saw in the third quarter again.
I think a big key for Teague, real quick before we move on, is if you look at free throw attempts, which is one of the things that Timberwolves are really, really good at, and they have been for years, but even again this year with the roster change, they're still are really one of the better teams at drawing free throws in the league, fourth in the league in attempts per game. But Jeff Teague got to the line 10 times in the win on Wednesday night, went 9 to 10 from the line. And that just, even when the shots aren't necessarily dropping, if he's getting to the line and he's just getting to see the ball go in the bucket, I think that's really good for him. And it means he's drawing contact, drawing fouls, and making smart plays rather than just throwing up contested jumpers that aren't getting the team anything. So I think I really like to see T get to the line, and I think thought that was a pretty big key to his offensive success on Wednesday.
He and Gibson both had 10 free throw attempts, and T actually shot really well too, 6 for 11, 54%. I like the night that he had.
Boy, Andrew Wiggins 7 for 23 on the night.
Yeah, he's had better nights.
He's had better nights. Still scored 22, but.
Well, and that's I didn't prepare this stat, and I should have, but I would like to go back and look at the scoring for the Timberwolves. I wonder how many times some of the top one or two scorers on the team have also led in free throw attempts, because I feel like it's a lot.
And it would make sense. The nights when they're getting calls, the thing about this lineup is it can be any of them. Like whichever game it was that Jimmy Butler got, like, couldn't hit the broadside of a barn.
But he had, like, 14 free throw attempts.
14, 15 times. And then, like, Towns, we know, can get to the line at will when he's got a good matchup. This game we see Teague with 10, Gibson with 10, Wiggins with 9, just all getting to the line at will. This is something that, like, it's been a consistent theme of the Timberwolves, even through their bad years, that they've always been able to get to the line. And that hasn't stopped being a focus point of their offense this year. 26.6 free throw attempts per game, fourth in the NBA.
Well, they're all just – there's not a couple guys who kind of just hang around the perimeter. All these guys are really good in the paint and driving into the basket. So it makes it for whenever you need these guys to get to the free throw line, you can really depend on any one of them to make a drive, because none of them are reduced to that stand in the corner or stand on the outside and wait for the ball to get chucked out there, you know?
And they're all used to playing through contact, which is a very valuable skill.
Yep. All right, so now let's look at that third quarter. What are a couple of things you saw in the third quarter that you really loved, really thought that they could pull into the fourth quarter, which they did not? But what are some things that you wanted to pull out of the third quarter that were positive?
Move the ball. And Tibbs has preached this since he came to the team. I've been in so many, like, not that I've been to that many games, but I've been in plenty of scrums where the first thing Tibbs says after a loss is they didn't move the ball from side to side enough. They didn't move it. And then that third quarter, you see what happens when you use both the athletic ability of the starting lineup that you have and the fact that they all, even Taj Gibson, are willing passers and able to make the open shots. When they actually look for the pass all the time rather than Wiggins or Butler or Teague or any of them trying to get too hard into their own one-on-one matchups, good things happen on offense. They scored 41 points in the quarter, and it was good basketball. And not only that, they played real defense a lot, and the Magic couldn't hit anything on them. Wiggins had a couple of stand-up possessions one-on-one on defense. So did Towns. They all had their moments, and the team defense was there. Only gave up 18 points in the quarter. So it's like it was probably close to as good as this team can look in a quarter of basketball, which is good to see that they have that real top gear, even against probably not the greatest opposition in the world in Orlando, but just them showing that they have the ability to turn it on is reassuring.
How depressing do you think it is for Thibodeau that great defense is still an outlier and something that we point out as a very good quarter instead of just a staple of the team?
I mean,
do you think he just has just quotes from random reporters in his office, like calling out the defense in his office, and he just looks at it every day?
Like, and if he can't figure out how to get this team to play better defense, I'm beginning to think that's on him rather than on the players in the team. Like, something has to change, whether it's changing your rotations or changing, he's not going to change his system. We know that on defense. But, changing how people are fulfilling their roles within the system, something has to, it feels like something in the framework of the team has to change to get some of these things to change.
Well, yeah, just saying that Thibodeau is a defensive guy is not cutting it anymore, because it's not clicking.
This is year three, right? Year two or three? It's not good enough anymore, and we know that, and Tibbs has to know that. And we can sit here from our lofty media seat and criticize all we like. He's the one that knows what's happening in practices. He's the one that's seeing all the stuff that we're never going to see, and he is an NBA head coach that's been in the playoffs, that's been down the road. But we have the right at this point to ask questions about what needs to change for this team to take that step consistently on defense.
Yeah, it's a cushy seat over here in media corner, but – I mean, he does have to push this and elevate this defense. Before we wrap this up and head to the Miami game, any last thoughts, any final things that you wanted to pull from this game?
I kind of want to forget about most of it because, boy, the bench was really bad, which they've gotten saved by the bench a couple of times, but the bench has had a couple of outings in a row that were just not good enough. Belly had his worst game in the last while. Jay Crossover
didn't even look that good.
Jay Crossover 3 for 10, 1 for 4 from three, and it's just nothing worked for those five guys. And it's a good thing, this was a night where the Wolves got bailed out by having superior talent in their starting lineup, which is great. That's what they signed these guys to do. But they need consistency. And I've said this every time I've been on your show, Colton. It's all about consistency, and they're still trying to find that from all players all the way down the roster.
I just got to believe it'll come eventually. Is the one thing I just keep seeing.
We're 18 games into the season. They've got a winning record. This is still one of their better starts to a season ever, which at 11-7 is sad and pathetic. But it is one of the best starts in franchise history. we cannot overstate that. And all of the complaining about this game aside, they won the game.
Like, they did, and they put up 124 points.
Like, they're going to keep doing this where we're going to find things to complain about because, number one, we're Minnesota, and number two, we know all of the weaknesses of every player on this team intimately already. But they got the W, and there's something to be said for that.
You're right, but that's always the concerning thing, too, for me, is that I'm looking at this team, and I want to be really excited about the talent and the fact that they're able to overcome some things and play through some things, but at the same time, it's hard to be ultra positive about a team that shows flashes and then in the same game just tosses those away. Just says, no, we don't need to play like that the entire game. We don't need to. We know we showed you something, but that's not how we're going to be committed to playing. That's just how we're going to play some of the time. And that's a little concerning.
Yeah, that's 100%. I'm with you.
Alrighty. So Miami Heat tonight. They're playing them. They put up 125 points last time they played the Heat. The downside of that was they let the Heat put up 122 points.
To be fair, it was an overtime game. They only gave up. Both teams scored 110 in regulation. So I'm gonna give a little bit of credit to both the Timberwolves and Heat there.
All right, that's a fair point. That's a fair point. But you still have a feisty. I'll call them a feisty Heat team coming in and playing the Wolves. What do you think of these guys?
The Heat are kind of like, they've got that little bit of like the Spurs of the East vibe thing where they're always going to be well coached. They're always going to compete no matter what the talent they have is. And they can beat anybody in the league. Shout out to the Miami Heat's last game in which they ended the Boston Celtics 14-game winning streak legitimately and outplayed Boston, which no one has done this season.
It was actually a 16-game winning streak that they caught too close.
Yeah. I knew it was something ridiculous. So Miami can walk in and beat. They're 8-9 on the season, but they can beat anybody in the league. And they cannot get slept on.
Quick side note, because I'm scatterbrained like this, but did you see Kyrie's mask, the what they did to it to change it up?
No.
It was the plastic mask, and then they had this huge piece coming off half of it on his right side. Just this huge piece that stuck like 6 inches over his head.
Huh.
I have no idea what I gotta talk to Lucas because I have no idea what medical.
This seems like a Lucas question.
I have no idea what purpose that serves to have 6 inches of plastic just towering above his head. But it was very strange. It was dare I say peacocking? It was weird. It caught my attention and it distracted me from everything for the rest of the day.
Fair enough. We'll have to see where he's at whenever the Wolves play the Celtics.
I got to talk to Lucas about this, but no, on a more important thing. So going into this game, one of the first things that should be called attention to is that Hassan Whiteside was not playing in the game one against the Minnesota Timberwolves. How much of an impact does that have now that he is in the starting lineup versus the Timberwolves tonight?
Well, let's go ahead and look at what kind of numbers Karl Anthony Towns put up in that game. Number one. 20-12, plus 12 on the night, 7-11. Had a really, really nice night. And I think that may be a little more difficult matching up against Mr. Hassan Whiteside.
He's going to have a long night.
He hasn't been like a focal point yet. Like, he only was 8-10 against Boston. So he wasn't like totally dominating on offense, doing everything, carrying the team. But it's going to be a lot more of a bruising, difficult matchup for Towns inside. And I feel totally feel thing rather than anything that I've seen, but Whiteside feels like a guy you can get in foul trouble if you provoke him a little bit. So this feels like a game where if the ball's going to work through Towns, he's going to need to be a little bit more crafty rather than using his power game, which we know he can do. And again, it's another game where I feel like Towns needs to stretch the ball out to the perimeter to pull Whiteside out of the paint, not let him get easy opportunities to block shots.
The thing that listeners are probably getting tired of us saying, but we have to hammer home here, is that Towns has to shoot from outside. If you're looking at the way Boston played against the Heat, Al Horford was playing 34 minutes and Aaron Baines only played 12 minutes, so Horford was the center for the majority of the game. and he shot a few three-point shots. He's a guy who can control the offense. He had four assists, excuse me. He's a guy who can facilitate offense from the top, and so he's forcing Hassan Whiteside to play out of his comfort zone a little bit on defense. You got to be that guy if you're playing Hassan Whiteside who pulls him out to the three-point line.
Well, and the question you have to ask at this point is the decision being made by Towns not to be there, or is it a scheme thing that needs to change? Because, again, we had another game. Towns did not have very many field goal attempts in the first half of the game against Orlando, and just it doesn't feel like the Wolves are using the advantages they should have with him on defense. On offense against teams, and which you'd expect the physical tools that he has, whether not even necessarily shooting from outside, but being able to receive the ball outside the three-point arc and either to make the decision to take a shot or put the ball on the floor and dribble, because that's another skill he's got. And it's just like, he can pass, he can dribble, he can shoot. Why is he getting stuck playing in the low post? That feels like more of a problem with the scheme than a problem with Towns' game in particular. They need to use the advantages they have with him. And I want to say John Meyer of Canis Hoop has made the point on Twitter during the Wednesday game is sometimes if you feed Towns on the offensive end, he'll get more motivated and play better on the defensive end. It's not a sound strategy or an analytics-backed strategy or anything like that, but it might be something to just feed your big guy every now and then, let him work.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think there needs to be more, leniency on what I'm willing to let him do, and not maybe a set schedule of things I want him to do, but just get him the ball and make a play. Because he's not only a good athlete, he's been playing basketball for a long time. He's a smart guy. He knows the game. He knows how to play against Hassan Whiteside, especially because I'm sure he knows that he is not a huge physicality contact guy down low in the paint night in and night out, and Hassan Whiteside is. So he knows what he has to do against him. And the other thing, too, in playing a little bit of a coach's advocate here, is that I think it would be hard to try and get these guys reps outside of a scheduled kind of set of things that you want to do, just because there's so many guys who can do so many different things on offense.
But my thing is, like, certain nights you have certain matchups that you should try and ride. Like nights when Towns has a matchup that you should be able to abuse, feed him, get him 8, 9, 10 shot attempts in the first half, see what's working for him. In nights where you're playing against weaker lineups, weaker wings, like, say, that Phoenix game a couple of weeks ago, feed your wings, let them do work, because you know you're playing against favorable matchups. It's not necessarily – because, yeah, you do have a lot of guys that can do a lot of things, but on a night where one of them is going to have a better matchup, feed them, let them do work. You've got the number of tools to let your – you have so many guys that can be number one options on offense. Let them work.
Is it possible that the coaching staff had some set things they wanted to do, and they didn't assume that the offense would gel this quickly, and they're still stuck in that kind of mindset of, we just got to get these guys to get on the same page together, and they're now on the same kind of the same page together offensively, and they're still kind of stuck in that old playbook of trying to get them to play together when they're already there?
That's kind of what it feels like. I think the team needs to adapt and be more flexible, which is not a value we've associated much with Coach Thibodeau in his career. But
you're saying he's not the chameleon of coaches, where he just adapts to any situation?
He's not quite the guy that has the most flexibility in the world. I will say that. I believe there's some media pieces out there on various Timberwolves media sites questioning some of Coach Thibodeau's offensive values and such.
I'm going to have to look these up.
I'll let those ride.
All right, looking at other players outside of Whiteside, Deion Waiters was somebody.
I'm scared of Deion Waiters, man.
I was waiting to bring him up.
If you see, I remember actually this specific game, the last Miami game, I watched with the rest of the zone coverage Timberwolves writing staff at an establishment in Northeast Minneapolis. And I could have sworn to you, cross my heart, all the jazz, that the last shot from Deion Waiters from three at the end of overtime was going in from like 30 feet. He was that hot the whole night.
Yeah, and he ended with 33 points that game. And, man, he was on fire. He is one of those guys who you worry about, especially after the fourth quarter that the Timberwolves just played against the Magic, where you're really worried about him doing something crazy at the end of the game and really throwing the Timberwolves on their heels?
Well, yeah, and this is another game that shows a lot of those symptoms of what we've seen from the Timberwolves early this season, right? We've seen they got whomped in the first quarter. They ended up being 32-23, but they couldn't score for like the first 5 or 6 minutes of that game. I remember very specifically they went down like 18-22 or something like that. They just could not get a bucket to go in early in the game. And they got back in it fine, and really there weren't any glaring scoring deficiencies between the quarters. But I feel like I remember them getting a bit of a lead at the end of the fourth quarter and then giving it back. I know in overtime they were up by 7 with under a minute left and gave it almost all the way back on some really bad decisions. So
that white boy Olynyk really making shots in the overtime period.
Shouts to Kelly Olynyk. He's a dude. He's getting paid a lot of money to do what he does, which is very interesting.
That's a whole nother conversation.
Sure is. Yeah, Dragic and Waiters carried Miami against Boston on Wednesday night. 27 for Dragic, 26 for Waiters. Nobody else on the Heat had more than 16 points. So it was all about their guard play, which, I mean, I've loved Goran Dragic's game for a long time. He's a crafty guy. He's really just the stuff that he finds. He was, if I remember the first Heat game right, he just found so many interesting shots and interesting passing angles in like the second quarter of the game to keep the Heat involved and in the game. He's a really fun guy to watch, even if he's on the opposing team. So I'm concerned almost more about Dragic and Waiters than I am about the impact of Whiteside being in where he wasn't the first game.
Oh, you always got to look out for Waiters. But that's the other thing too, is guard play was really big in the first matchup that the Heat had with the Timberwolves as well, because Olynyk had the solid overtime and that pushed him to 23 points, but Dragic had 18 points and you had Waiters with the 33. Dragic had 5 assists as well in that first one. So he's just going to find, like you're saying, interesting shots, and then off of that, he's going to get guys super wide open, because then you have guys pulling towards him because he's making these weird shots.
But this is good. The key is guard play on both sides, because if you remember the other side, this was Jeff Teague's first real big game as a Minnesota Timberwolf. 23 points, 11 assists, 5 rebounds, and 6 steals on the night for Teague, who was everywhere in the third quarter, especially of this game. This was like the game where we saw, like, this is what a Timberwolves team with Jeff Teague can look like when Jeff Teague's playing his best ball. And that's, I don't want to say we should look for it tonight, but it's this. He clearly was comfortable in this matchup the last time we played, so I'm optimistic that we could have a big game from Teague tonight.
Wiggins, too, had a solid night with the 22 points and the 7 rebounds. Mm-hmm. He's another guy. I feel like he's another guy who could really do well, and I think if Winslow plays another solid chunk of minutes, he might be on Winslow, and I think he's a guy that can beat Winslow.
Yep.
All right, so it is Black Friday today. It is, I think, one of the most celebrated holidays by Americans, if I'm not mistaken. Everybody talks to me about Black Friday and how excited they are. They never talk to me about any other holidays. So
shouts to capitalism.
Exactly. So we're going to do a little thing where we buy our favorite either matchup, player, just our favorite thing going into this game against the Heat. We're going to buy what we really like versus the Heat tonight.
I would like to purchase some discounted shares of Jimmy Butler on offense.
I'm surprised you find those on discount still.
People are selling them these days. People don't seem to be thinking that the scoring is going well for him.
Jeez.
I think that Jimmy, like, it just keeps feeling like he's close. Like, at each one of these last few games, it feels like he's close to going over a line. And with he led the team in scoring on Wednesday night with 26 points on 10-19 shooting, which, if I'm not mistaken, is one of his better offensive outputs of the year, along with, I think, the second Oklahoma City game. And it just feels like he might be hitting some form right now on offense, which would be very nice to see, especially if he can do it within the flow of the team. We remember the Phoenix game where he's like, I'm going to find my shots, I'm going to be more aggressive, and then he shot a bunch and didn't hit anything. But if he's finding his scoring opportunities within the flow of the team like he did on Wednesday night, that's huge for what the Timberwolves can look like on offense. So I'm gonna take my chance with a Black Friday deal on Jimmy Butler on offense as a scorer.
He's also going into this game super hot, 52% shooting against the Magic and 75% from downtown.
Yeah, it feels like it's time for Jimmy to go on a hot streak, and this would be I'm gonna buy now before he gets too hot,
too expensive. All right, I am buying on Jamal Crawford. Actually, I'm thinking that after a poor performance, he's going to come out. He's going to have some solid minutes in the second quarter, and he's going to knock down some shots, and it's going to lead to Thibodeau wanting him out there in the third quarter, and he is going to end up with somewhere between 15 and 18 points and have a solid outing.
All right. Do I get to buy one more?
You can buy one more, yes.
If I need to go look up just one statistic real fast here to see if what I believe is still true. Oh, no, he's been surpassed. Speaking of bounce back games, I'm going to buy a bounce back game for Nemanja Bjelica, who is now third in the NBA among players who are actually like taking a reasonable number of three-pointers, still shooting 51.2% on the season.
I love it.
He did not play well on Wednesday, and there's no way around that. He needed to be better on defense. He didn't get the shots to go in. But I just like, I believe in what we've seen early this season from Bjelica, and I think he's going to bounce back in a meaningful way against some bench lineups that might be more favorable to him against Miami tonight.
This does feel like a good bench game.
I want him to be good. Like, I want him to be good. I think he's going to bounce back. I think the shots are going to drop tonight. I'm in favor of good Bjelica tonight.
This does really feel like a good bench game. Like, there could be some bounce back from the bench who's had a couple down games. And now you could see, like you're saying, some solid matchups that he aren't exactly super deep, and so I think you could see a couple of those guys having a lot of points. I'm gonna buy Andrew Wiggins as well. I'm gonna buy his stock. I really feel like he could have another solid game. I think he's gonna be one of those guys who just ends up averaging about 21-22 points a game, and so it's easy to buy him night in and night out because he's gonna put up points. But I think he's gonna have a solid defensive night too. I think he's gonna end up with a couple steals and blocks each. And I think he's going to be one of those guys where you're looking back, and Tom talks about this a lot, actually, when he's on the show. You're looking back, and it doesn't feel like he scored a bunch, but he ended up with 22 points out of nowhere, and he's just one of those quiet 22-point guys.
Yep. And I will buy one thing from Miami as well. I would like to buy Miami's rebounding tonight.
that doesn't have anything to do with Whiteside, does it?
No, it has to do with you remember what happened in the first matchup where Bam Adebayo absolutely killed the Timberwolves on the glass?
Bam Adebayo. How can you not rebound well with a name like that?
Right? So, and it's with Whiteside back and with Adebayo in. Adebayo gave Towns some trouble on the glass in the first game. And with having both of those guys in playing almost all of the minutes for Miami, I'm a little bit concerned. The Timberwolves have done really well on the glass in a lot of their wins this year. And I think this is a game where they might not have such an easy time on the glass, which means they're going to need to shoot better from the get-go. They're not going to be getting offensive rebounding opportunities. The defensive rebounds might not be as easy to get for them. So they've got to shoot better in this game if they want to win. I think that Miami's rebounding could cause some problems to the Wolves. So I'm gonna buy a share of that.
All right, quick question. I'm going to put the over-under at 13 minutes. How many minutes do you think Adebayo and Whiteside play together? Over-under is 13.
I'm going to take the under just because I think that's a – I don't think Tibbs would let that happen without putting some more shooting out there. Like, if there's any lineup that will convince him to play Bjelica Gibson in the front court on offense again, that's the kind of thing that could get – you'd really just want to stretch those guys out as much as you can, get them away from the basket, and take what you can get on the defensive end. You're losing a little bit of size to them both, but – I think that lineup has some very punishable vulnerabilities on defense that could be exploited.
No, I think you're right. It would just be interesting to see those two guys rebounding for like Waiters and Dragic, especially Waiters, who only wants to jack up shots. And if you have two guys who are really good at rebounding and giving them a couple extra chances.
Yeah. Well, and the thing with offensive rebounding always is that you're relying so much on how the ball's going to bounce. Because sometimes you're just going to get balls that are going to bounce out to the guards.
It's true.
If you clank back iron, or if you clank the front of the rim, or like there's so much luck of the bounce with that. And while skilled rebounding is very much a thing, it's hard to rely on that. It doesn't feel like a lineup that Coach Spoelstra is going to rely on too much, but it's an interesting thing to think about for sure.
Yeah. Well, and my number one assumption that's probably wrong is that I'm assuming that Waiters will not find anything but the bottom of the basket because he's just a stud.
You appear to have a significant timeshare in Waiters Island, good sir.
Is it me and Bill Simmons out there?
When he's hot, he's so fun to watch. It's so hard to argue with that with Deion. Even when he was on Cleveland and stinking the place up, like when he's on, and it's those guys. It's hard to argue with that. They're just good to watch, and I'd love to see him clanking tonight. Just me personally, give me some clanks tonight. Let's make this an easy one.
Between Deion Waiters and my Detroit Pistons, I think that I could go on a vacation with all this stock funds.
Man, your Pistons look good.
I've enjoyed watching them. They have like it feels kind of like the Timberwolves, where they have an interesting bench that you're not really sure about, and you have a bunch of talent, and it's just fitting perfectly. And this is like the best version of the team that it could be. Whereas the Timberwolves, they have these pieces who are turning out to fit perfectly, and hopefully they get better. But I think this is honestly probably the best the Pistons get. Oh my gosh, it's a dog.
Yeah, you get a guest appearance from Mr. Toby the Corgi on the podcast. Just one, though.
Just one? Alrighty. Well, anything you wanna plug before we head out here?
I'm good to go. Obviously, hope to get some more content pumping out in the next couple of weeks once we get back to the December grind. I'm hoping to see – I know we've got some content coming out over the kind of first quarter of the season coming out on zone coverage this week from various guys. I'm going to try and take a look at the stats this week and see what I can glean from various statistical factors as we hit the 20-game line. Quarter of the season, kind of a good game to step back and take a look at what we've got so far. So lots to look forward to. I know we've got a lot of written content coming out on zonecoverage.com this week. So, yeah, keep your eyes on it. Keep giving us those clicks. And always tune into Wolves Wired on Mondays and potentially Thursdays.
Specifically, look out for the recaps for tonight. In case you have family who doesn't let you watch the game, we've got you covered. We got recaps out on Zone Coverage.
Yeah, we'll have a guy on, and I believe Mr. Tim Fakeless is going to be at tonight's game, getting all of your coverage that you could possibly want. So take advantage of that. We've got guys on the scene all the time.
I love it. Alrighty. Thank you very much. He's David. I'm Colton. And this has been another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.